Come now, all you mangy dogs. Swab the decks and hoist the sails. The guns on board be needing some proper manning. Pieces of eight and a fine wench on your arm. If you work, be not too shoddy. Careful not to flounder too badly, though, or you may have to dance the hempen jig as we see you to Davy Jones. The Jeffy, my boy, on with the show.
Ah, shiver me timbers. To our listeners from across all regions of the planet, welcome once again aboard the Robin Hood, flagship to the world's one and only cooperatively inspired charity podcast network, WPRPN. Streaming out this week from under Korea's strangely crystal blue early spring skies, you've tuned in to episode 98 of Pirate Radio Podcasts. I'm your host, as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. Declaring it her life's mission to wake up as many people as she can before global rulers destroy the planet, this week's guest is the Robin Hood's very own Missouri-based musketeer, Emily Anderson. Believing people have the power, Emily encourages others to share their innovative autonomy and consciousness-raising inspired ideas via places including the Lost Arts Radio discussion groups, both on Facebook and Minds.com. Join us this week as our conversation with this inspirationally engaged citizen covers a whole range of topics and issues, including anything from unschooling, organic farming, herbs and permaculture, the history of government psyops, Wilhelm Reich's Orgon Therapy, and Sufism. Yes, indeed, friends and mateys. We have with us this week none other than our very own Missouri musketeer, Emily Anderson, for episode 98 of Pirate Radio Podcasts. Emily, we actually managed to come into contact and first cross paths with, I don't know, it's been almost a year, has it not, Emily? Something in that area?
Yeah, I think so. It feels like about a year that I've been on Minds and aware of Pirate Radio Podcast. And I want to thank you for having me on the show today, giving me a chance to put some ideas out there for people that may have tuned in before, but just aren't aware of some of the things I've been focusing on, maybe.
Well, it's our pleasure, and we're really happy to have you, of course. We've been really looking forward to this for a while. It's not very often that we do get the opportunity to speak to you, so this is really great. It is a pre-recorded project that we are embarking upon here this week simply because of your schedule. I'm not sure if you really want to go into too much detail about the actual job that you hold down, one of them at least, along with raising, I think it's just one little girl, down there in Cape Girardeau, southeast Missouri, I believe is where the city is located. But yeah, you've got that job hawking steaks and I'm not sure what else, pasta dishes and...
Yeah, nice bottles of wine. yeah, I stay pretty busy. My daughter, she stays at home with me. We do a version of homeschooling called unschooling where I allow her to follow her passions and then I'm just more of the facilitator. I'm not sure if anyone listening is familiar with the work of Dana Martin, but she's a very inspiring example of allowing children to learn in a natural way. So we do that. Like you said, my night job. During the day, I have a lot of different passions. I found myself becoming an activist without even intending to, not in the traditional sense of, you know, doing marches or protesting, but just educating myself on some of these topics that I think are very important to our future and freedom and health.
Absolutely. Yeah, you really seem to want to get as intensely engaged as one would even really dare to. So you definitely got that scrappy fighting type spirit, which is really great. That's the sort of character that we're looking for as far as the Robin Hood here is concerned, which kind of brings me to my next point, I guess. You're actually, as it turns out, one of our, I think right now we've only got still about 6 Patreon supporters. So what was it that first drew you to our show, and what made you decide to, I guess the expression is belly up to the bar for the big, you know, $1 per item of Patreon premium content?
I really like to support alternative news outlets. I was just inspired by your just independent, free-thinking way of approaching different topics going on in the world. And it's just, I think it's great to have that variety and the grassroots approach to these different things we're facing and trying to educate ourselves on. So I wanted to support you in that. I tend to overwhelm myself. I have a lot of different people I like to follow and support. So that's my challenge, is just to kind of narrow it into one thing at a time, because there are only so many hours in the day. But I guess I'll start out by telling everyone a little bit about my upbringing and things that have shaped me. So I claim Southeast Missouri as my home. I was born in Montana. My dad was in the Air Force until I was about 5 years old, but then we made our way back here because my grandparents live here on both sides of the family. And I was also homeschooled. I have 2 little sisters. They're younger than I am. One's a chef and one's a veterinary technician. We still get to do a lot of things together, go hiking. We have some similar interests. We grew up in a rural situation. My mom was always an avid gardener. We were on a goat dairy farm for a lot of my growing up, a lot of my childhood. So I got some hands-on experience with the goats, the milking, birthing process. And that's kind of stuck with me, the animal husbandry. When I was about 9 or 10, I even experimented with gerbils. You can ask my mom, my room was just filled with gerbil cages, and I wanted to see what color varieties I could come up with. So I started learning about gerbil genetics at about 10, and I guess I've always been a dabbler. I was into playing piano, got involved with gymnastics for several years, and competed for a little while. But mainly, I've just always been interested in biology and the natural world. I'm an avid reader. Throughout my adult years, I picked back up on gardening, which I give the credit to my mom for inspiring me in that. And that branched into herbalism and permaculture. And you start to find that everything ties together. Like, you think you're learning about all of these separate things, but they really all fit together. I realized if I, you know, can make my own medicine and grow natural foods, that was a very empowering feeling, because then you don't get caught in the cycle of, well, I need an antibiotic and then I need to recover from the antibiotic because now I'm having all kinds of distress in my digestion. You can't learn these things overnight, and I still feel like I'm just scratching the tip of the iceberg. I guess I'll talk a little bit about the permaculture side of things. I started finding workshops in my area I could attend. One last year that was really fun was an organic fruit tree growing workshop, and also a beginner's permaculture design workshop where I got to meet Mr. Wiseman, and he was involved with, I think, Toby Hemingway at one point. So, and I was inspired by that. That was a book I had read and been very impressed by. So I'm just kind of filing away all these things for when I can purchase land and start implementing. I do want to have a food forest soon, implement the dairy goats, and just maybe start offering some of these things to my community. We already have a flourishing farmers market. So that's another aspect of like why I like this area.
You live in a really blessed part of America and have a lot to certainly be grateful and give thanks for. As well as that, you pretty much from the time you popped out of the womb have been, it seems, right on course and knowing almost instinctively what your calling in life was and what you were perhaps put here on this planet to do with your, as you're alluding to earlier, interest in animal husbandry and raising your gerbils and the basic interest in science and so forth, biology and whatnot. So that's really great that you have that really strong instinctive sense of where it is that you're headed to, where it is you want to go and what your calling is. So one of the things we talked about in the pre-interview was this business of valerian or valerian root. I've been having some tea lately. You're talking about antibiotics. I've had this, it seems, really not so positive reaction. And so people really, this is a good, if people have not heard of this, be aware that valerian root can be potentially, I'm not sure how many instances or cases have been reported of fatalities or deaths, but look out. I've had, seems like headaches or a little bit of nausea, almost like flu type symptoms, you know, is what I've been experiencing. I think it's just simply because of the ingestion of one capsule of this substance, as well as just today, a little bit of the tea. But on top of that, Agenda 21, if you want to address those two, because Agenda 21, homeschooling and the like, they really love that over there in whatever it is, Brussels or The Hague, wherever, you know, Geneva, where the crafters of this Agenda 21 legislation or whatever it is exactly was put together. That's really top of their list. They want everybody to, of course, practice homeschooling, don't they?
The sarcasm, I'm assuming.
I'm being facetious, of course. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I'm not well educated on like the beginnings of the United Nations, and I'm just kind of picking up on what others are kind of seeing the agenda coming forward now, and you know, the Agenda 21. You can just pull it right up on their website. So,
from what I understand, Harry Truman, San Francisco, 1945, if I'm not mistaken, you know, just really some really dodgy and what is the word, sketchy characters involved in that for sure, and from all various cores, including multitude of war criminals and, you know, hardcore hardened Nazis and the like. There's so many areas, of course, where we could benefit from researching, and I guess that's why we have people like yourself. You have your specialty that you are really, you know, strong and schooled in, the strong suit that you hold. So if we could, yeah, just run with what you had in mind there. I'm not sure what you wanted to say exactly, whether it's the UN.
Oh, yeah, or, I wanted to go back to the valerian before we completely forgot about it. I haven't worked with that herb specifically myself, but I do know that not every herb is tolerable by every person. So it's always good to just try a small amount first and see how you react to it. I think there's also even a pulse test you can do, and I don't know if you would need a special equipment for that, but you take a small amount of an herb and then you check your pulse, and that's kind of a subtle clue that your body is either, you know, working with that well or not. And one thing I try to focus on in my herbal regimen is I've learned about nourishing herbs versus herbs that just provoke a response, like similar to where the pharmaceutical companies kind of ran with that idea. They focus on more toxic substances because those are the ones that can be used positively in small amounts. But really for day-to-day use, I drink things like stinging nettle infusion, clover leaf, oat straw infusion, because that just gives you your full spectrum of minerals, some phytochemicals that are beneficial and can help you regulate hormonal signaling. So, but yet it's not really having a specific response as much as like when I do take my St. John's wort for nerve pain. So it's just better to stick with the nourishing herbs. And I would direct people to Susan Weed to look into that a little more.
What a name. Perfect match there, of course. Yeah. World-renowned herbologist Susan Weed. The wise man character you referenced a few minutes ago, I thought that was quite funny, too. But hey, St. John's wort, there's another one. People got to be careful. Yeah. What do you know about that?
That one, if you take it in very large amounts, you can become sensitive to the sun, have more of toxic reactions in your skin, so you don't want to do that. I only take about a dropper full of the tincture daily. and I'm still trying to find out if that can help with the nerve pain in my shoulder. I'm having great results from the topical application of St. John's wort oil, and that's where someone has picked the fresh flowers of the plant, infused it in the oil for several weeks, maybe even a month, and then you strain that back out and just apply it directly to the skin, and it absorbs right into the site of your pain. I wanted to tell you about an organic farm in Illinois that my daughter and I participate with.
Before we do that, if we could just quickly, and you're the one that's best qualified to do this, address the whole business of how St. John's wort does not go well together with anybody who's on antidepressants. You know the deal there, don't you?
Oh, yes. Yeah, sorry about that. I forgot. Yeah, that is important because herbs, whatever effect an herb has, that will create a synergistic or, exponential kind of reaction. It'll increase the effects of any pharmaceutical drug that has a similar action as the herb. So you don't want to compound those effects because you just don't know what kind of result you're going to get. Like any kind of herb that thins the blood, for example, I drink the red clover infusion, which is in the nourishing spectrum, but it does have a slight blood thinning effect. So my grandmother, for example, has von Willebrand's, and she shouldn't be drinking red clover infusion. So there are some things to look out for, and you always want to research each herb carefully before you start using especially larger amounts.
What is von Willebrand's?
Oh, that's a blood clotting disorder. Her blood is very slow to clot. So if she would ever need a surgery, there would have to be many blood donors. She'd have to have a blood donor prepared and ready. Because she's going to lose a lot of blood anytime she has a surgery. And you can also have ulcerations of the stomach. She suffered with that before during stressful times where just bleeding ulcers of the stomach.
Your family bloodline then seems to be related perhaps to the, maybe not so far distantly related from the Russian royals, the last czars of Russia, the Romanovs, I believe was their name. Were you aware they suffered from the same, I'm not sure if you have inherited this or not, this issue, but it was a big deal throughout their family lineage, apparently.
Yeah, not that I'm aware of, and I don't know what causes it. I guess it could just be a genetic thing, or at least you maybe have the genetic coding for it, and then depending on what you're exposed to, then that epigenetic switch is triggered. So I don't like to take genetics as a finite reason that we have these negative experiences. I think there's always a way in most cases to switch those genes and put a lot of things back into remission.
You had some people you wanted to give a shout out to. Quite a list is from what I understand. Before we carry on any further, why don't we get into that? Because yeah, it was quite a list. Who'd you like to say hi to? Avast me hearties.
Well, I just wanted to give a shout out to my Sufi friends in Anna, Illinois. I think what they're working on is amazing. They have an organic farm. They homeschool the children in their community as well. A lot of the families do. They have an herbal product line called Diamper Herbals and also a local cafe, the Long Branch Cafe. And on Wednesdays, they have kind of an open invitation for anyone that wants to volunteer and learn these different skills. My daughter and I go on Wednesdays during the summer months. We try to make it once every 1 or 2 months. And we've gotten to dabble in the okra harvesting. I thought it was amazing they were able to grow ginger in their greenhouses this year. They also raise chickens, turkey. We have a nice community lunch and get to catch up and talk for a little while. And my friend Kurt, who we have mutual Facebook friends, he was actually able to meet me there. And that's where we met for the first time just a few weeks ago. He has a background in Sufism, I think. He really enjoyed being there. And we were able to discuss some of the more, I guess, to most people would be called esoteric ideas. He brought his Kenrola scalar disc with him, which is like a composite of crystals and resin, which the idea is it puts out a really nice biologically enhancing energy field. And that's a whole nother rabbit hole of what Wilhelm Reich was working on and Tesla. So him and I are working on that together and trying to learn more about it and experiment and put that into practice. So it was just really nice getting to meet him in person. Kurt had some experience using antidepressive drugs in the past and before he realized that there are alternatives. And his story is really inspiring about how he was able to use affirmations. You know, basically, it's really important that we do our inner work, because the outer things that we do are great and can be helpful. But if we don't realize that we are worth making these changes in our own lives, it sounds crazy, but you actually have to talk to yourself. You have to say, you know, I love myself, I'm worth it. And just the simplest things like that can really turn everything around for you. And then you feel empowered to, instead of just accepting what everyone else is offering for you to do because they're certified or smarter than you, but there's an inner voice. And if we follow that, we usually have a lot better outcome. And we all have that. We all have that inner guidance. We just don't listen to it most of the time. Like you were saying earlier about my background, and from your perspective, it seemed like I always kind of had a direction and knew where I was going. But at the time, I felt completely lost. Only recently have I realized, you know, the patterns in myself, and it's all kind of led up to this point. But I didn't know that those interests were going to serve me now. If we were able to tune in a little better and instill that in our children, what kind of hands up would that give them? So that's something I think about. Since we were kind of talking about empowering ourselves and kind of working with our minds a little bit, I wanted to apply that to some of the division I see in the activist communities, like particularly the anti-geoengineering movements. I kind of want to help to be a voice for everyone collaborating. There's all kinds of talk of who's controlled opposition and which speakers are, and, you know, not to name names, but there's just all the different platforms. There's climateviewer.com, there's Dane Wigington's channel, and I think they're all very useful. And rather than focusing and like tearing everyone apart and trying to find out, well, where are the holes and how they're portraying this to everyone so that we can learn, I try to look for like which people are being proactive. And one of those is Jolie Diane. She's really helped me kind of do something tangible rather than just be resigned to typing about these things on the internet. And so she is collecting rain data from all across the nation, maybe the world. I haven't looked into that part yet. But at least from the nation, these rain samples, and she has a GoFundMe account that I encourage everyone to check out. But if you don't have the funds right off the bat and you want to do a rain test and work with her, you can do that. I just did that recently and I got my results back within, I think, 2 or 3 weeks.
How much is something like that, Emily? How much? What price-wise would somebody be looking at?
I think it was right under $80 to pay for the lab to analyze the aluminum and the sulfur levels and several others. But I think what that's going to do, all this, you know, vast data collecting, is really going to help our cause. And she's also working on some legislation, I think, through the, I don't know if I quote this right, H611 bill in Rhode Island. She's just, you know, putting her feet to the ground and doing what she can. So I support her in that, as well as Suzanne Mayer with Bye Bye Blue Sky. And that's a great channel to help people learn more about this.
We've had her drop by the show, and actually she has joined us now a couple times over the past couple years. So yeah, we are quite happy to have her do that. In fact, it was Daniel De La Rosa, a.k.a. Satori D., who was a part of another show that we recently did with punk rock libertarians. Ah, gee, was that episode 96? I got my numbers straight here. So he first turned us on to Suzanne and Bye Bye Blue Sky out of Ontario. That was it's proven to be a really solid and great connection. So big thanks to both of them. For listeners who are not aware, we are, of course, speaking this week with Emily Anderson, our Missouri Musketeer, based out of Cape Girardeau, the southeast region, the corner of the great state of Missouri, USA. And this is episode 98. And we've been, once again, really looking forward to having her. We got, I'm not sure, we've been plowing through a lot of topics here and talking points and whatnot. But with the time that we do have left, let's just back up a little bit. Because one of the things that we'd like to have addressed here, your Sufi friends, I'm not sure where they're, one of the local communities there around Cape Girardeau, I guess, is where they call home. But as you're probably aware, Sufi is a very kind of almost, it's a minor sort of offshoot, persecuted sect, really, of Islam, is it not? Very mystical orientation.
Yeah, that's exactly how it was described to me. And I do have some of their publications they offer to help educate. I haven't read them in their entirety. I think one's called The Tarekat. I don't know if I say that correctly. But they do follow, I think, the teachings of Muhammad. But it just seems like a very peaceful religion. They do a lot of meditation.
Yeah, you don't find too many Sufis around the world waging violent jihad against the kafir infidel. I'll say that much. So, yeah, it'd be great, in fact, to maybe have one of them come on the show at some point. If they're interested, we'd be more than happy to do that and to accommodate them. So, leaving that aside for the moment, tell us then what pressing issue you have next in your sights.
I guess I'd like to talk a little bit about a new contact I have, Benjamin Tomlinson. He's another guy based out of Missouri, and he has a rather unique story. I don't know if I can convey it very well in a nutshell, but I'll try. He is living mostly off-grid on 20 acres out in the Missouri Ozarks, and this is, I think, a pretty recent thing for him. We were on the phone the other night. He was telling me how he had a feeling that he should, you know, get a shotgun, buy some land, just this general urgent idea of preparedness. So he first approached some of his friends and was like, maybe we should just go for this, get a piece of land, set up a place where people can feel safe, kind of take back some of their freedom. He didn't get a response right away, so he prayed about it. He said the very next day, he saw a double or second sun. And that was intriguing to me because I've seen reports of that. Like many people around the world are reporting that and posting photos of it on the internet now. And we don't know what it is, if it's a reflection because of the plasma being generated in our atmosphere, or if there is some other planetary body out there. Who knows? But anyway, that was the sign he needed to just get moving on this. He's like, the world's not right. We've got to do something. So he's occupied that piece of land, and he's just learning as he goes. He said he had a more of an urban background. Luckily, he has some friends near the area that are helping him. The other night, he said he was having armadillo for dinner, and that, you could easily poison yourself if you didn't know how to prepare armadillo. So he's going to start his YouTube channel soon. I think there's a few videos there now. It's Ozark MT King on YouTube. So I guess that stands for Ozark Mountain King. And I urge people to check that out. He has an open invitation for anyone that wants to participate. Just contact him. They need people of all skill sets, gardening, metalworking, woodworking. He just saw the need. It's very important, some of the things we're facing now, to just help people take their power back in that way, learn some of these skills. That's kind of the theme, is that we're just all so dependent on our modern lifestyle. Kudos to him for getting that going.
Oh, absolutely. And if anyone out there or here, via the ship, the Robin Hood, any of the crew members are ever able to bring something to the table and to share with the wider community as far as knowledge or information, tips and insight into how they can help to improve people's lives and make them less, as you say, dependent on the matrix grid, we consider that a major win, of course. Not that the Kraken thinks too highly of this whole matter, because this is totally against their agenda. Exactly the last thing that they want is to have an independent, self-sufficient population able to stand, each of us on our own two feet, and together as well, too, shoulder to shoulder, back to back, as one cohesive fighting unit, basically one collective voice saying, no, this is, hands off, or what have you, this is wrong, or, check this out, have you heard about this, and as you were mentioning earlier, the divide and conquer sort of tactics that are often used with these people, I'm not sure if the term is COINTELPRO exactly, but there are those who are most certainly, they're paid government agents. Some people can be really quite paranoid about the whole business too, and really overreact in a completely unnecessary way. And maybe those are the agents, who knows, people that just aren't able to hold their cool and see things from a level-headed perspective. But, I mean, hey, you're, as always, Emily, you know, we've talked a few other times via the Rogues Gallery, and this is the first time we've actually managed to get together and focus a spotlight on you, though, just as a featured guest. And, yeah, you're really going down the list here and just, you know, checking things off, all kinds of great points. Thinking about the armadillo, Ozark Roadkill. Yeehaw. Let's fire some of that up for dinner tonight. So this character they talk, his name, is it Benjamin?
Benjamin Thompson.
He comes across as a relatively sane individual. Like, I mean, you're having mystical religious experiences and visions. That is a little, personally speaking, and just generally, it's a little problematic. I mean, I'm open to these sort of things, of course, but, you know, he's not like a raving lunatic or anything like this, is he?
No, it seems to me that this is an actual phenomenon happening in our environment, and we can't explain it right now, but I feel like there's enough reports of it that we should take it seriously. I don't know if it's even on the mystical spectrum at all.
He prayed, and then the next day, how did that work? There's a vision of a double, or did he say triple sun? He wasn't too sure.
Yeah, a second sun. So that might be something to look into. Yeah, again, I've seen a lot of other people reporting this. Yeah, they just don't know if it's a mirroring effect because of something that's changed in the atmosphere. I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole of people that think that it's planet Nibiru coming back in its elliptical cycle, because I just don't think there's enough proof to that. But there is some kind of phenomenon going on with that, I do think.
Yeah, you'd think if it was the planet Nibiru, we'd all be able to see it. It wouldn't just come and go, like one person or two people be able to see it, then it's gone and disappeared. And yeah, exactly. So it was CGI and all that other.
There is a patent on an LED false sun. I've heard of that also, but I keep my mind open because at this point, like everything I've looked into, really there's nothing that I would completely rule out at this point.
Any good scientist, that's what they have to do. You're required to. You got to be careful of taking sides or jumping to conclusions, you know. But open mind, that's great. There's a lot of power in that, I believe, in reserving judgment rather than stating decisively that we know something one way or the other. That's a really great position to take.
You'll surprise yourself every day if you just keep your mind open and just look at these different things. You don't have to spend hours and hours on it, but just kind of look into it a little bit. That's kind of what I'm doing with the idea of Ormus. I'm collecting materials to try and brew some of that. And it's something you can water your plants with. You can drink small amounts of it. It's a process like anything else. Like I was saying with the herbs, you don't want to start with large amounts. What Ormus is technically is orbitally rearranged monoatomic elements. And don't ask me to explain the science behind it. I'm just a beginner in this. But my friend Joe Kovacs, he's been making it for, I think, a year or more now. And he has a whole process, a video explaining it. There's not even a set list of ingredients you have to use. Most people start with as pure of a kind of clay as they can find. Some people use diatomaceous earth. And this gets into the realm of energy. And one thing you have to be concerned with all the Wi-Fi pollution, people talk about tinfoil hats. You actually want to cover your container you're making this in tinfoil, so the energy of the Wi-Fi doesn't ruin the effect.
Let me just jump in, Emily, because I was going to say, with the tinfoil hat and whatnot, Wi-Fi, absolutely. That's one issue or area where I got no problem waving a few red flags and saying, like, this stuff is creepy. Because, like, where does Wi-Fi end, right? I mean, they're blasting stuff right through apartment walls and concrete buildings and so forth. Why are people so foolish, dare I say stupid, to think that this Wi-Fi simply ends where their body starts? They're blasting this right through all of us, including our vital organs, our brains, our reproductive organs. I mean, you name it. And with this 5G, the way that they're going to really start to crank things up and boost whatever it is, I'm not sure if it's a Tesla-based technology that they've, how they've managed to harness this and get this throughout the planet, really, with this technology that they're using, but quite disturbing, to say the least.
It requires building or constructing smaller cell towers spaced more closely together because this signal is like a tighter waveform. It's more powerful, penetrates us more deeply, but yet it can't travel as far. And all our government and industry is concerned about is the economic activity this is going to generate. And well, streaming faster videos is going to be great, right?
Yeah, hang on. It's not just that, though. Every single time any technology or innovation comes up, it's military. That is the number one issue that's on the table that the powers that be are most concerned with, the military application. So you're right about the money. But it's also, what can we do? How can we use this to kill more people, make them, you know, entirely defenseless and incapable of, you know, fighting back or resisting our efforts to subdue them? They will submit to our will, you know.
Yeah, I think we should keep our eyes to the cities as this is being implemented because, you know, those are the people that are going to be affected first, and I wouldn't be surprised if it can affect our emotional states, thought patterns, because, I mean, everything is energy. It's already been proven. Like, music affects the brain, so why wouldn't a very strong, powerful waveform like that just completely disrupt our emotional well-being?
Absolutely, and the thing about myself, you're being based in Korea, I can report to you quite confidently that the majority of the population here, including the most of the expats, as far as that's concerned as well, too, completely oblivious, could care less. And many of the foreigners will razz you about the tinfoil hat kind of thing, as you alluded to earlier, you know, tee hee hee, ha ha ha. But the indigenous population here as well, the native Koreans, it's sold to them through their television sets, Samsung, LG, you name it. You probably heard about these smart screens, which I think Orwell predicted, the telescreens, how your television would ultimately be spying on you, and I think even, yeah, well, talking to you, but also, yeah, listening into your conversations, and kind of Minority Report, too, if you think about it, with the way that we've heard reports now about these, and we're going to see them, I guess, they're probably, I think they're in place in various locations, Tokyo and whatnot, probably even up in Seoul. It creeps me out to no ends, and one of the reasons I visit there as little as possible. But these tailorized ads based on, in fact, there's been some videos around where if you've seen these what they put together on YouTube and the like, everyone is being watched now with their own, and I think this is in accordance with smartphones, presumably, but it could be more than that. Even still, I'm not sure, but where they've got all their specs and details, you see all the people mingling about through the city and on the screen where they're promoting this program and broader agenda of surveillance and police state authoritarianism, of course, the creepy kind of panopticon deal that all their particulars, all their specs and whatnot, private personal information and the like.
Yeah, in regards to the smart TVs and all of the new technology, what kind of legitimizes these ideas in my mind is that, well, if you think of it in reverse, well, if there are these capabilities, we know we have them, it just seems likely that they would be used for purposes of power and control. If you just think of it all being completely benevolent and never being used for anything bad, that's almost too good to be true. So you've got to keep your eye open for that. And kind of along those lines, I wanted to bring up the St. Louis testing. This was something that was happening in the Cold War. And it's kind of an example of if it can be done or experimented with, it probably will in regards to the government and larger agendas. And this is all public, came out publicly. Now you can type in on stlouistoday.com. During the Cold War, there were blowers installed on the top of a high-rise building in St. Louis, and this was low-income housing. Zinc cadmium sulfide was being just blown out through whatever they had put on top of this building, and it was for experimental purposes under the guise of this is a smoke screen in case the Russians attack us. You know, there's always a reason. It's a we're helping you kind of idea. But there's people coming forward now saying, my dad died of cancer. I'm fighting off three or four cancers. In 94 is when it was exposed to Congress. 97, there was a study. Of course, they determined that the levels were not really harmful to people, even though people that went through this are saying otherwise. So it's still kind of, even though it's out in the open now, it's still not openly admitted that, oh, this harmed someone. It's just openly admitted that, yes, this experiment was being done. So I like to find confirmed conspiracies like that to then open people's minds to, well, what could be happening right now that no one's going to really look into or push as stepping on our human rights until 50 years from now. So that's why we live in a time we really have to keep our eyes open. And that's why I'm always following the geoengineering. Most listeners know that Harvard is coming forward documents now that we need to intervene with the climate because CO2 levels are dangerously high. And I see that as just another kind of cover for something else they're doing. Just like in St. Louis, this is a smokescreen, protect you from the Russians. Well, we have to protect you from the CO2 levels. It's never even been proven the CO2 can be high enough to harm anything. There's evidence to show that in prehistoric times, plants and animals were huge, the CO2 levels were high, which then the plants loved and put out more oxygen. Everything was like higher levels. So I'm just not convinced this isn't more about power and control. Maybe part of it's controlling the weather. That will be maybe revealed in the future. But right now, we still have to stand against it without even knowing the exact reasons behind it. We can prove that things are different now than what they were. Kind of background to the geoengineering issue, because that's something that I can't stop working towards.
Working towards exposing or talking about as far as the geoengineering is concerned?
Yeah, exposing, talking about, keeping an eye on it. I'm reading Alana Freeland's new book, Under an Ionized Sky. So I can't get into that quite yet because I haven't read the entire thing. But she really exposes some of the deeper agendas. It's not just about controlling the weather.
Oh, full spectrum dominance. Hashtag FSD, the war on humanity. Hashtag WOH. I don't, why these are not have not gone viral yet, I don't know. You know, it's great that I guess the Me Too movement has. But there's so many other things that could stand to win or garner greater public attention as well, too, let's not forget. So, hey, let me just back things up here, because it's interesting you're talking about this, what took place in St. Louis, how many every years ago it was. Maybe you can just kind of revisit that to refresh my memory in a second here. But New York subways, I guess the subway system of the city back, I think it was the 1960s or, gosh, 70s, hopefully, you know, one of those decades. But yeah, the CIA ended up getting caught red-handed. What I understand, they were spraying chemical agents, and it was the same kind of deal. We're just doing this for your own good. You know, we're just testing this out. So just in case we, you know, might need to use something like this at some point in the future. So total just BS, plausible deniability cover story. Hope the public buys it, you know, and if not, well, you know, what can they do about it anyways? So
they get away with it every time. That's what blows my mind. Yeah. Even when people do bring it to light.
The whistle's been blown and the lid's been blown off of so many over the years. Just think of the number of things that take place on a day-to-day basis and even, you know, throughout the years historically that we've never even heard about. Nobody even has a clue.
That makes me think of the vaccine court issue. Are you familiar with that?
No. And I don't think probably most of our listeners aren't either. So now's a good time probably to try to fill them in. What are we looking at there exactly?
I want to say that this was something that was passed in the 80s, but it's definitely active now. It's a special vaccine court.
Oh, right. Hush, hush. Let's pay off the people who are lodging these complaints and who have got these issues and lawsuits. Shh. Hundreds of billions. Is it not the case? Is that what we're looking at there? Is that right?
Their budget, I checked earlier, is
good for you. The vaccines are good for you.
Yeah, their budget is $3.7 billion a year. That's how much they're allotted to pay out. And it makes you wonder, well, this is a government program, right? The money doesn't just come out of thin air. It's got to be taxpayer money. We're funding our own kind of hands being tied behind our back. We can't sue companies like Merck, these manufacturers, if they have a dangerous vaccine, because we've just allowed, I think it was like a Supreme Court order, probably this vaccine court. I don't think it was just voted into existence. And now we have this vaccine court to protect them. I really think it's our own money paying out. So it's this cycle set up that we didn't approve of. No one's liable, truly. And what really gets me is there's a 3-year limit on making a claim. If your symptoms didn't appear within 3 years, and a lot of these autoimmune disorders that people are experiencing, they don't always. And I just think that's ridiculous that it's so difficult to be awarded money to begin with.
And I'm just doing a little bit of homework or research on the side here while you unpack those thoughts. It looks like it was, the question rather is, did the CIA test LSD in the New York subway system? Now, what date this is exactly? Oh, was it 1951? I guess maybe it was 1951. You got to be joking. There was no LSD in 1951. Hmm. Was there? That's when. Does it go back that far? No way.
Wow.
Anyways, I'm not sure where exactly where you'd like to pick up from. Just in shifting gears or our focus here. But let me just remind people who are just dropping by, tuning in at this very moment, we are speaking with the Robin Hood's very own, one and only, Missouri Musketeer, Emily Anderson, out of Cape Girardeau, southeast Missouri. And she is bringing to us, to the table, and to the listeners of Pirate Radio Podcasts, episode 98, a lot of great insight, information, and updates as far as what's happening from her vantage point down there, I suppose you would say, in Cape Girardeau. Some of the great things that her friends have helped her out with, as well as, you know, a whole number of the issues that are near and dear to her heart. So you've got a whole checklist or laundry list of issues here. It's just quite something. One of the things we like to talk about, two things, the Consumer Bill of Rights, which is something that I guess maybe Christina Taft, who is the founder of the Everyday Psych Victims Project, from what I understand, that she had drawn to your attention. It's been out there a little bit more, seen it in social media, I guess, because apparently now, just the other day was the anniversary when that was first launched. Maybe you could fill us in a little bit about that, but also your YouTube channel. You've got a lot of great stuff there, including recently liked videos. I was doing a little, I'm not sure if you'd say trolling exactly, but I, you know, we got to do our homework here in the lead up to all of our shows. So the Florida High School active shooter drill, there was rather an active shooter drill before the actual supposed killings or whatever. It was ridiculous too. You look at all these actors, because they were doing a drill. They're all decked out with fake blood and all that nonsense and so on and so forth. But also this character, Bill Donahue, who is a religious scholar, really quite, he's an amazing, amazing man, just so very gifted, you know, his speaking ability, his knowledge, the research that he has embarked upon and really pursued over the course of his lifetime. I think he's still alive, as a matter of fact, quite old, but I believe from what I recall, I just seen some activity, courtesy, he responded to somebody that was mentioning something or another on one of his YouTube videos just last year, as a matter of fact, saying he was retired and everything else, but certainly seemed he was still alive. Gardasil is another issue that I guess is near and dear to your, you know, something that you feel quite passionate about. And we talked about, of course, 5G, the full spectrum dominance, electronic warfare, and the like. You know, we had an ET experiencer on the show just this past week, Kevin Estrella. One of the things that I never got a chance to talk to him about, though, was this business of Wi-Fi and the unramping or unraveling or just rolling out, unpacking of this 5G technology and how that stands to impact certain, you know, because they talk about with the ETs, I don't know if you know too much about this yourself, but some of the so-called experiencers, so much of it is a question of consciousness is what they say. But I don't know if you have any thoughts on the matter. Have you heard about that, or and how 5G, just generally, even just ETs aside, would stand to impact our consciousness?
Again, that's all within the realm of possibility. I haven't looked into that particularly. My friend Michael Huntington, he always approaches it from the opposite spectrum. He's like, well, I'm just going to look at what things have some weight behind them and some facts. He doesn't do as much interviewing with the experiencers, which, not to discredit them, but I think he focuses more like on historical documents and things like that. But then what was it we were talking about? The Consumer Bill of Rights. Oh, and Bill Donahue. I was recently introduced to him by my friend Kurt, I mentioned earlier. And I like how his interpretation of the Bible is a lot different than like a lot of the churches in my area would look at it. So that's really refreshing. And he ties in meditation and some of these tangible things that we can work with instead of just a powerful force that we can't affect at all. It's more like an integrated approach is kind of the feel I'm getting from him. So I look forward to watching some more of the Bill Donahue videos. And the Consumer Bill of Rights that Christine is working with, and her platform also, I think, is worldy.com. Is that right? .com for a social platform she's working on.
Mm-hmm.
I like where she's going with the Consumer Bill of Rights, like give the power back to the people, hold producers accountable for injuries of their products. I think we were talking earlier how it makes me a little uncomfortable this was endorsed by the United Nations. But I mean, that doesn't make any difference. We can take any kind of initiative, reclaim ownership of that, and make it a grassroots movement again. So, I mean, that really doesn't matter. I really like where she's going with that.
Social media, too. That's the major tie-in, really, I guess, that we should be emphasizing. How, you know, we've all experienced this. Maybe not so much you yourself, but you've heard about it, I'm sure, and then seen it. YouTube and Twitter and Facebook, just terrible. You know, people endlessly thrown in Facebook jail, the Facebook gulag. Mm-hmm. YouTube videos being demonetized now, just right across the table is what it seems. Unless you're some super huge channel with millions of views. So they've removed that totally. That's no longer part of their sales plan or the way that they've decided to operate, of course. But censorship, too. That's the big one, really. You can demonetize all you want, I guess. That's up to you. But censorship, people such as yourself, even Alex Jones recently kind of got on the bandwagon. He himself has had to, I guess, even with the size that he is, with InfoWars, as ridiculously huge as they are, that they've had to, you know, they've incurred the wrath of the YouTube, I'm not sure, the Red Army Brigade or whatever. So it's pretty crazy. It's almost like, yeah, Chairman Mao. Well, he had his little red book back in the day, The Cultural Revolution. And really, that's what we're seeing a reoccurrence of here. But it's taking place right throughout the West and Europe, of course, too. My God, now I know this wasn't on the list of items we had talked about, but Lauren Southern, if you've been following social media at all, or what's been coming up in your either Facebook or minds, you've probably seen some activity the way that she was banned from entering Britain just because of some of the opinions she may hold. She was put on a terrorist watch list of sorts. I found myself having to suffer similar treatment in crossing borders, which I really haven't bothered to do for the last 10 years, and I've just decided to more or less vote with my feet. So living a life essentially of a de facto, you know, political prisoner, really not free to move or to leave the country because of the way that people are handled, dealt with in crossing borders. It's so ridiculously heavy-handed. And the Canadian customs officials are the worst. But the biometrics, I got to say, and this is kind of like there's a lot of things that are being kind of thrown out there right now, but the biometrics issue is a big one for me, and it's a total violation, an intrusion in the worst possible way of our basic, you know, right to privacy, of course, too. Fingerprints are bad enough. And that's back in the day when passports with just simply fingerprints were used. And I'm not sure if you know this or not, but there was a time for a number of years where passports weren't even necessary to travel internationally. But if you want to just kind of maybe tie in a few of those things or talk about Lauren Southern, her companion, I think her name is something, Brittany Pettibone, perhaps, or just these people that have mm-hmm. kind of politically incorrect views is what it is, you know. And my God, Britain's just gone crazy. So with the political correctness, it's really sad, frankly. So
I did watch a little bit of her personal interview where she was just kind of recapping, you know, how she was detained. I think questioned for about 4 hours. She has a recorded phone call with her dad about it. Just a really big ordeal. I mean, I'm sure they wouldn't have taken it too far with, you know, her being a pretty well-known public figure. I'm not sure.
She's ended up speaking now. She's in the European Parliament just today. That's where she's recently appeared. And so it's kind of captured some major headlines for sure. Although you have, of course, outlets like CNN, which they just choose to completely ignore these sort of stories, including Hillary Clinton nearly falling down. I think she's leaving the Taj Mahal or some holy site in India. And I'm not sure if you saw that video or not, but she twice Mm-mm. nearly fell to her, well, what some probably wouldn't consider overly untimely death, but some people speculating about her alcohol consumption. But yeah, go ahead with, you know, this business of Miss Southern and the like.
It's really gotten to a ridiculous level. What got her into that, I haven't verified this, didn't it have to do with some kind of like signage or message she was promoting that was just kind of like the opposite to what was happening from the Muslim spectrum, maybe of anti-Christian slogans. I can't remember exactly how she spun it in maybe a satirical way, but I thought maybe that had something to do with it.
Well, she was scheduled to speak at, there was some gathering or meeting of some sort, political rally of sorts, and she was, I guess, going to be a featured guest or speaker. And there's another character. His name is, what is his name? Something Robinson. And he was recently, is it Tommy? Tommy Robinson? Which isn't his real name either, by the way. But he's very high profile, part of the British Defense League or something or another. But the Speaker's Corner, well, anyone historically was able to speak, even, you know, it didn't matter what views you held. Could be of any place on the political spectrum. And historically, yeah, they've hosted countless speakers, quite famously. I'm not sure the exact location in London where this Speaker's Corner actually finds itself. But apparently, I think the police shut him down just today. He tried to appear there and to speak. So it's really quite bizarre. You know, it's clearly, you know, they're showing their cards for sure, and their hand is being played here. So this goes hand in hand, I would say, too, with Theresa May. She's not even elected, for crying out loud. You talk about, there's like a major crisis in legitimacy. On top of that, you have the Brexit vote, which totally, they're going totally against the will of the people, which is, We want the hell out of this, you know, and they're saying, oh, no, we'll take this over to the House of Lords now, and we'll talk about this a little more, and I don't really think we can do this, so let's just hang on here, and you're not so fat. This isn't what the elites want, you see, it's like the power elite. Really, this isn't what we had in mind. We had something, another sort of end game here that we had envisioned, and this is not really the course of action that we were hoping for, because it would kind of throw a wrench into the works with what we had been intending, but
since you're speaking on kind of political topics, I did want to tie in Peter Valentino, who's running for governor in California, if that's all right.
Oh, sure. Yep, you bet.
Lost Arts did a recent interview with him, and I like how he's going to have a website up soon. I'll go ahead and say pretty soon they're going to have valentino4gov.org. It's a number 4gov.org. He is campaigning on an anti-agenda 21-2030 platform. So he's just coming right out and saying it, you know, here are their plans for us. California does not have to participate, even if the rest of the U.S. has. So yeah, he just wants California to opt out of all the programs, which, you know, have to do with like the housing and the zoning laws. And it's really comprehensive. You'll just have to read the document for yourself. But the way he was approaching it, you know, because we all know that there's something to the shadow government and the elites, the elite puppet masters. Well, instead of not knowing who to kind of go after and keep in the spotlight, he's like, let's just focus on the United Nations, because that seems to be the right arm of whoever it is that we cannot identify. I really like that and want to run with that also. Because, I don't know, there seems to be a lot of legitimacy to that, that a lot of the negative things being implemented, taking away our freedoms, it seems to come from the UN. So I encourage everyone to check out Peter Valentino's Facebook page and follow what he's going to be doing as he's running for governor. Rob Rubin's working closely with him. I've spoken with him personally. He's a really good guy. He's helping Peter with his campaign. And there's another gal in California. I don't know if anyone's familiar with Sheryl Jensen. She's not running for any political office in California, but she did write her own legislation, I believe. It's a very comprehensive environmental toxin exposure kind of legislation, and I'm probably tearing it to bits. It encompasses like the poisoning of our air, water, medicine, food, and she's really working on getting that bill through.
You mentioned, I think it's Peter Valentino is the one candidate's name. People are easily able to find, if they just do a quick DuckDuckGo search, stay away from Google, folks, that is the Kraken. Mm-hmm. But this other individual, Sherry, I believe was her first name, how would you, she
hers is spelled C C-H-E-R-I-E-L, and then I think Jensen, J-E-N-S-E-N. And I haven't been able to find her main webpage. I've been communicating with her on Facebook.
Okay. Maybe Twitter, yeah, too, perhaps. Who knows, you know. So, hey, tell her about Mines. Tell the, you know, Peter about Mines. There is a California group they do have put together over there. You know, I've seen pop up in my news feed a time or two, so why not?
Mm-hmm. That's just going to take everyone being aware of what other people are working on so that we can give each other that boost that we need to get our message out there. We all seem to be very fragmented at the moment, right, in the beginning stages of trying to have some good, right, come of what we're doing.
Yeah, we're on the topic of Mines, and it's kind of what you're talking about here. Give people a sense of what others are, you know, clearly involved in here. Looking at your profile, you've got a whole great number of groups here off your main Mines page, which if people want to check out Emily's channel, it is simply mines.com/Emilia. I guess that's how you pronounce it. E-M-I-L-E-A-H. Emilia. Yeah. And the groups that you are, it seems like you're somewhat actively involved in, Missouri, WPRPN, got a link to, I guess there's America, Biography, Chomsky, Current Events, History, what else do we got? Infinite Imaginarium, InfoWars, Middle East, Occult and Mysteries, Photography World, Pirate Radio Podcasts, Ron Paul, Wi-Fi, and Grace Potter. She's quite a talent, isn't she? Has she ever toured through Missouri?
Not that I'm aware of. You introduced me to her music, though. I really enjoy listening to her.
Yeah, and then you put the group URL there in your channel profile descriptive bio area. So that's really great. She's awesome. Yeah, she's just, my wife actually turned me on to her, and I checked her out. I love, you know, any kind of, you give me some good rock and roll, usually gets me interested for sure. And I'm able to really kind of, talking about music and so forth and how certain sounds and vibrations and frequencies are able to mess with our moods and our spirits. Well, I don't know, rock does it for me, usually in a good way, you know, usually in a good way. So,
yeah, I like a lot of indie music. My favorite bands are Rising Appalachia, Kirsten Pixton, and Yaima, Y-A-I-M-A.
You're still working on helping out, trying to get some of those groups maybe to check out what it is that we put together here. Now, three editions, three various installments of the Mines World Indie Music Showcase. I know you talked about it in the past. Any luck or developments on that front? Maybe our fourth installment will be able to make some headway if they manage to check out Mines.com. We've actually discarded this idea of everything on YouTube has been demonetized. So now if your music is copyrighted, it doesn't even matter. Hell, we'll play it. You know, but initially we were just looking for people who had not copyrighted their music because of the grief we were getting from YouTube. But I think we're beyond that now. So, yeah, as long as you got a Mines channel and it sounds good, we're happy to give your music a listen and consideration for a spot in featuring you at some point over the course of any one of our upcoming Mines World Indie Music Showcase installments.
I need to put that on my radar with some of these musicians, like you said, because I'm sure a lot of them haven't even heard of Mines.com and, you know, the extra exposure that would gain them too. I tend to get distracted and all the things that I feel like are more vital. I've been learning about some of Trevor Constable's work with translators, and it's so much you can just get caught up in.
Trevor Constable. Now, I've heard the name. What is he best known for exactly then?
He kind of picked up on Wilhelm Reich's work and ran with that and refined it.
Yeah.
The videos I've seen of him, he's attaching these long pipes to, I think it was an airplane, not a helicopter. And he could replicate over and over again how he could bring rain to an area and there was no rain in the forecast.
We talked about the Ormus just a few minutes ago. Is that not based on Reich's orgone energy theories?
Yeah, there's so many applications, and I'm just beginning to scratch the surface. So, like, the technology with the translators, the pipes, that's working with the weather. The Ormus, that's something that's in a liquid form that you can, you know, I said earlier, you could use it internally for your plants to increase growth. But I think it all really does tie into this scalar energy, and many people have called it different things, you know, your chi, your prana. It's just a hard thing to talk about because it's not tangible.
My question, I'm sure the question of many of our listeners as well, too, is, has this been scientifically tested, though? What we've got here, just in a descriptive form, because I did grab a little snippet from, and I'm going to click on the link here in just a second, I've copied via Facebook, but it says here, now when I do it with the clay, it forms clay sludge porridge at the bottom. That's what we're ingesting. As the ormus is embedded into the sludge clay itself, at the end of it is when we siphon the water off the top. I swoosh around the remaining amount of water like panning for gold and pour it into a separate container. But yeah, has there been any like really rigorous scientific testing conducted on these experiments proving these theories?
Not that I've been able to find with the ormus particularly. Maybe my friend Joe could help guide me to one of those. I guess the studies that, or independent studies I've seen, are more in relation to the energy fields. So like the organite pieces you see with the crystal or quartz embedded in resin with usually a type of metal. Now, when you put a potted plant on or near one of those, and then you have a control plant that you're growing, the growth will always be significantly more. So I was thinking about doing that experiment with my daughter. That's something you could do with all ages, I think. So these things can be demonstrated, but as far as like peer reviewed, most of the time it's always still just thrown out the window, I think.
Yeah, I look forward to hearing back from you on that front. It'll be interesting to see if you have a success with that experiment. Joe Kovacs is his name, and followed the Facebook link here. Talks about ormus materials, or rather minerals, mental benefits, clearer thinking, greater clarity and focus, intuition, emotional healing, a whole list of items here, really, that it claims to impact and effect in a positive way. So it increases electrolytes, energy, prevents muscle cramps. I mean, you name it. So almost as if like a panacea cure in many ways for people.
And from what I've read so far, there's a percentage of ormus in the plants that we're eating now. And maybe we wouldn't even be alive if we didn't have it. So maybe kind of the idea that the fish swims in the water, so they don't even realize they're in the sea. So I want to be careful not just touting it as something, you know, magical. It's never been seen before, because we've probably always been around these things and just never knew how to kind of like concentrate these energies or elements. So that's kind of what I see my friends working with, is just enhancing these, because maybe the chemical agriculture is diluting it in our food supply. Like, we know that's happening with the main minerals for sure. So why not these monoatomic elements? That makes sense to me.
Yeah, I think like a lot of people, I would just myself like to see it tested, or you know, and demonstrated actually practical application of its use and efficacy. That would really go a long way, obviously, to helping boost the legitimacy of, you know, some of these, the claims surrounding the, I'm not sure what it is, if it's a, would you refer to it as well, substance, I guess, really, or Orgonian, Reichian based, substance. Let's talk a little bit about Wilhelm Reich. You probably know, maybe, hopefully you know a little bit more than me, which is largely that the man languished in jail at having been arrested and imprisoned by the federal authorities, and that's where he died. So a lot of people have said since that time that, you know, the U.S. government, that's another, you know, political prisoner who they murdered, basically.
Before I forget, I just wanted to point people, if they want to learn more, check out Ken Rolla's channel. His website is freshandalive.com. He's really worked with some of these things extensively, like the scalar discs and the ormus. He has a video how to make the ormus at home yourself. But then to Wilhelm Reich, yeah, just from reading the introduction to one of his books I'm reading by his daughter, he died in prison just 2 weeks after, or 2 weeks before he was scheduled to be released. So that right there, that doesn't add up to me. I can't keep track in my mind, like, he was speaking, I think, for the Communist Party for a time, but then they even ostracized him because he didn't fit into their idealisms. And he had a really long, interesting story. So people kind of have negative connotations when you bring up his name, because he was looking into orgone at first in respect to how it's related to our sexual energy. And I don't see anything wrong with that. I think that's probably just as integrated into activating this scalar energy life force as many other ways. Like he has pieces of equipment. There's an orgone generator. It's a box style. I have the plans. You can make one out of a coffee can for your plants. And that kind of ties in back to what we were talking about, where you can enhance plant growth. And with the translators from the other end of the spectrum, plants gravitate towards them, grow larger in the vicinity. So there is definitely something to this kind of life force idea and how we can do things that concentrate it.
It'd be interesting to see how many people in the listening audience have actually experimented with Reikian, you know, putting his theories to testing them, or some of the ideas, trying to see if they're actually effective and work in practical application. It's too bad, unfortunately, once again, just to remind our listeners, this is a pre-recorded conversation and weekly feature event that we are working on putting together and producing. So, which is unfortunate, because if it were actually live and in the moment, we'd be able to take live real-time callers and interact with their comments as they come into us. But as it is, Emily, with her schedule, this is the best way that we're able to do things. So it is about, you know, it's pushing 1 o'clock in the morning here in Korea, not the typical time for us to record or do our show, but it all depends on the guests, really, and the free time they're able to come up with in their busy lives. So just before we do close, though, we do have a few more minutes, but just, you know, big thanks, Emily, you know, just so that we're able to express our gratitude. It really means a lot to us. We really appreciate having people such as yourself, including all the other great guests that we've had join us. You really, together, have, I think, enriched the lives of all of our listeners, even though we're only still really operating here online in the digital and cyber underground. There's a lot of knowledge and a real wealth of information that you all bring to the table. And I think that, you know, people who do tune in and listen to the show that we produce here on a weekly basis really do manage to benefit from in a big way. So who knows? Maybe over time, the flagship here, the Robin Hood, will prove to be a real kind of critical hub as far as what is the word I'm looking for here? Well, just a way of getting information out, I suppose, hosting interesting guests. And that's really what we look for, people that are a little bit sort of off the beaten path and not really the huge, super well-known personalities that most would think of necessarily when booking shows. We're just out to bring people on board who have interesting stories to share, really, and who have not been featured in the mainstream press and whose voices have not really had the opportunity to be showcased. And that's why we offer this platform. Yeah, it really means a lot to us to have you, because without you and without our listeners, the show would not happen. I'm a part of that, doing my job on this end of things, but you folks really are the people that make things come together. Now, you've got a Minds profile, which is, we've talked about just a few minutes ago, minds.com/Emilia, E-M-I-L-E-A-H. And you've also, I'm not sure, you're going to share your Facebook, I guess. I don't know. You have a Twitter, too. You're also, I think, just recently a new member on Discord, which is a great new app. Do you want to maybe talk about any of those, or can you discuss your thoughts on Discord, or just where we can find you on Facebook, of course, too, Twitter and so forth?
Yeah, just my full name, Emily Anderson, on Facebook. I don't post on Twitter very much. I'm not fond of that one. I also have an account on Informed Planet. I started a Facebook group there for the Lost Arts Radio group. So that's one. I just started a Steemit account today, and that's more of a blogging platform. That one actually has cryptocurrency affiliated with it. So it's one of those deals where if you forget your password, forget it. You're never going to see that account again. So I'm just now dabbling in that. I'll let you know how that goes over on Steemit. Yeah, Minds.com, that would be the main one to reach me, I would think.
And let's not forget, we had initially booked you as a Lost Arts Radio co-producer. You immediately shot us down or nixed that idea. You figured, oh, that's going a little too far. But the bottom line, really, is that you deserve those kind of credits. If you do help to arrange interviews with guests who end up appearing on various shows, and you've helped to make that connection and line things up, get everything in place so that they're able to be booked, you are entitled to receiving co-production credit. You're what's formally known as the booker. That's kind of how it works.
It's really been a blessing, and so many things have kind of came to me not even expecting. Like, for example, Rob Rubin approached me because of my affiliation with Lost Arts, and I was able to help put them into contact with each other. And through my friend Kurt, he made me aware of Harry Rhodes, which ties back in with the translators we were speaking of. And we recently had Harry Rhodes as a guest. So I'm just so thankful that by helping and putting my time into this, which we all have, what we want to do is just help others and empower them with every ounce of knowledge that we can so they can be an active participant in their own lives and then in the bigger world. So everything's just kind of tying together. I think it's going to be a great year. I can't wait to see, you know, what comes of all these connections and networking, see what we can accomplish together.
Absolutely. We're actually ourselves hoping to, we managed to pick up 6 Patreon supporters over the course of 2017. You happen to be one of those. I don't know if we've actually interviewed any of our other Patreon supporters to this point, although we're totally open to that, of course, because you, in a sense, are stakeholders and shareholders in this production. You should never kid yourselves about that one. We take your support quite seriously, even if it is only a dollar per premium item of what we put together. But speaking of 2018, we are hoping, just for our listeners out there, people that are dropping by and tuning in and downloading the shows on a semi-regular basis, you might want to think about doing the same. I don't think it really costs that much or adds up in a big way. We hardly managed to get out any real Patreon content as it is, unfortunately. Christmas, we really pushed hard, you know, in the lead up to Christmas, of course, because we wanted to get a few more, I was going to say shekels. That's one way of referring to things, I suppose. Doubloons, if you're a pirate, of course. So, the doubloons in the community chest. That's the way we like to roll here on the Robin Hood. Okay, Captain. Thank you for...
Emily.
Are you going to drop in now, Captain?
I think it's a good time now, Jaffy. I want you to talk a little bit about Lost Arts Radio, too, if you would.
I'm sure she'd be happy to do that.
But I'm waiting for her to talk about it.
Yeah, I've been holding back the entire show because that is kind of my main passion that just ties all of these other subjects together. I started listening to Lost Arts Radio over 2 years ago, and that's how I became aware of so many of these topics. Before then, I was focusing more on the herbalism and the permaculture, and I still think those are great practical ways to, be independent and take some of your power back. But Lost Arts, they take it to a whole nother level of working with your mind. We all have mind programs that we need to address, and you know, some of it's from our cultural, our upbringing, beliefs we have about ourselves. Just like the yogis alluded to, there's many levels to ourself, and we have to integrate all of those. We have our mind, our body, our spirit. Planetary Healing Club is where we really delve into that, and it's really hard to discuss. You'll just have to check out some of the videos on our Planetary Healing Club YouTube channel, and that gives previews to the kinds of things we talk about. And the inner work that we focus on that helps us be more effective in our outer lives and in whatever activist avenues we want to pursue. So yeah, go to lostartsradio.com/club is where you're going to find the information about the club. And the Sunday shows are always available to everyone. That's where we have guests like Peter Valentino, Harry Rhodes, Cheryl Jensen. So if you want to inform yourself on some of the things going on around us, just listen to the Sunday show. And then if you want to dig deeper, go ahead and sign up for our private video format Planetary Healing Club.
Sounds great. Definitely something well worth looking into. They unfortunately have been hit quite hard as well too by the recent demonetization on YouTube, so I'd imagine are probably looking to become engaged via any number of other platforms, of course, whether it's DTube or you name it, Steam It or Minds.com. There is a Minds.com group I have noticed, and actually we put your link onto that group actually just tonight, so we got you tied into that. Now, I'm not sure of his affiliation. This is one of the notes that we had jotted down here. Chance Garden, who we interviewed, speaking of Patreon supporters, big thanks and a shout out to Chance, of course. He has been by our side here, kind of tied into things, a stakeholder, investor really of sorts, in the Pyradio Podcast Productions and broader network, even if it is only, once again, like a dollar or so for each piece of premium content that gets out there. But if you would, and if you're able to at least, tell us a little more, fill us in, because I'm not too sure myself, something some of our listeners might like to know about as well. But is his project with Interverse, is that an independent, separate project from Lost Arts Radio, or what's the relationship there exactly?
Yeah, it's a completely separate project. He's based out of Missouri near Springfield. Lost Arts is based out of Arizona, Sedona, Arizona. And I discovered Chance while looking for guest speakers for Lost Arts. And he came across my feed one day. I think it was on Minds.com. I listened to a few of his shows. I love what he's doing. He focuses on a lot of spiritual topics. Again, things we can do to just be better people and fine-tune habits in our lives. I really get a lot out of his Interverse Plus channel, which I think is kind of like the same setup you're doing, where a small monthly fee. And instead of just, I think it's the first hour, then he does an entire second hour with these guest speakers. They go really in-depth. One recently I enjoyed was an herbalist. They talked about the benefits of elderberry, cannabis, and CBD oil applications. I get a lot out of it. It's very inspiring.
And Springfield, Missouri, of course, too. Isn't that where the Simpsons, actually, I think they're based out of that very location, are they not?
I had forgotten about that.
They yeah. are, aren't they? That's where Matt and Trey, Matt Stone, Trey Parker, or is it Matt Parker and Trey Stone? I always get those two mixed up. But anyways, I'm sorry. I'm totally getting the two series mixed up too. South Park, what am I talking about? The Simpsons, South Park, or rather Springfield, Missouri. South Park is based out of, where is South Park? Which South Park?
I assumed Canada because of all the jokes, but I don't follow them.
No, there's got to be a South Park in the States. There's got to be. Aren't there South Parks in the States? There's no South Parks?
Maybe. That's kind of out of my realm.
You can tell it's getting late here. I'm shutting. I'm not able to hold it together, maintain the illusion of cognitive coherence anymore. So I think it was the captain. He really threw me off. Game. Anytime he comes onto the mic, I almost catch a whiff of that heavily scented rum breath of his, and the grog just seems to ooze from his pores and really just bowls me right over. So it's almost, I guess, analogous to what pot smokers experience when they talk about these contact stones. So
you better lay off the grog a little bit, Jaffy.
Yeah, well, I only hit that during the Christmas season. Other than that, I really don't like to drink at all. Of course, if there's any weed around me at all, if I ever get a chance to get back to Canada, I know that I don't smoke a lot. One or two little hits off the pipe or bong or what have you, and that's about it for me. That's all it really takes, you know. So, but I'll unfortunately have no chance of doing that unless I manage to catch maybe a flight or a train or maybe even take the bus up to North Korea there and embark on, you know, because with the pot tourism industry that Kim Jong-un is kicking off now on the heels, presumably following Trump's visit to the Hermit Kingdom. You know, it's completely legal, of course, so, or maybe you don't know, I will You probably do, because I talk about it enough on the show, and you've listened to enough of our, you know, what we've put out on a weekly basis. But wouldn't that be something? Dennis Rodman, actually, with his visit that he made up there, he handed the dear leader a copy of Trump's Art of the Deal, and his trip was sponsored by Potcoin. So people, you know, such as myself, a little bit in the know, we clearly see how Pyongyang, they talk about how they are lacking economic resources or support and this and that. It rings completely hollow, and there's just, it makes no sense whatsoever where you hear this monotonous kind of repetitive, you know, pleading for handouts and donations when they don't do anything about it, especially when they could, you know, capitalize, well, that's a dirty word, cash in on the pot tourism potential of the country. And if they don't do it, what it'll clearly show to me and to anyone that's paying attention out there, observers throughout the wider world, is that it's all just stagecraft, totally just fake, just total nonsense and, you know, BS. People are being hoodwinked, you know, having the wool pulled over their eyes, if you follow what I'm getting at. Jay Dyer is a really sharp, astute, amazingly well-spoken, insightful, intelligent analyst who has his own channel together on YouTube and various other media platforms. And that's one of the things he talks about. He says the North Korea, it's a CIA state of sorts. So, I mean, I could go back and listen to the show once again. That was his point, basically, in his position. It's a CIA-sponsored rogue state. It's all fake, folks. It's all just a bunch of crap that, you know, with the propaganda that is constantly, you know, they target the West with, and vice versa, I suppose, to promote fear and to legitimize these ridiculously excessive military budgets. That's all it is.
And like Max Egan says, if you ever listen to some of his shows, it's all theater for the masses. I like him too.
Right. Yeah.
And we can't talk about cannabis without bringing up Peter Eugene and the amazing work he's doing with cannabis and even hemp paste, which is very low in THC and he can ship legally around the states. I actually ordered some for a family member one time that was struggling with fibromyalgia pain. What it is, it has very much to do with the extraction process. You don't want these harsh solvents, which can then contaminate your body with even more chemicals that you have to process out. We have enough of that in our daily lives and food. So what he does, and there's videos about this, Peter has just given to everyone, is he does a very low temperature extraction in coconut oil and vegetable glycerin. And you make an orally administered medicine from cannabis doing that. He had a recent run-in with the law in, I want to say he's based out of Nevada, maybe. I forget, but you can ask him about his story. His site is privatis.me, privatis.me, privatis.me. I think I said that right.
Peter Egan, are we talking about here? Another friend.
I pronounce it Peter Eugene. His private.
Oh, okay. I thought we were talking about Peter Egan. Peter Eugene, gotcha.
Yeah, he's doing some great work and kind of exposing the CBD oil industry as not being as useful. Yeah, people are getting some benefits to it, but there's a lot of waste in their process. You can just get so much more benefit out of the full spectrum. I'm very into whole plant medicine, and that ties right in with that. If you want to work with cannabis as a medicine, he uses the whole plant. There's no waste. Look up Peter Eugene on Facebook. He also has his own group, which I think goes by the privatist.me.
All right. Well, we will most certainly do that. Looking at the clock here, it looks like we have managed to run the gamut and pretty much, I think, cover all the bases, at least from this end, that we had hoped to. So, assuming things look all right from your vantage point, now might be the time to call it a night. Is there any of this last closing thoughts or comments, points you'd like to get out there before we wrap things up?
No, I think we'll just have to pick back up on another time, maybe. It's been a great talk.
Hey, that sounds good to me, and I'm sure the captain does concur.
That's great, Chappie. Anytime Emily wants to drop by, she's more than welcome to pop by the Robinhood.
Well, thank you.
I think he really likes you.
Oh, she's really great. She's wonderful.
Okay, Captain. Thanks for that hearty, really, voicing his support there for you. So one last thing we'd like to remind listeners of is we do have a weekly midweek muck around the World Pirate News event that we are working on getting out there to the masses. Every week now, same time as always, only on Tuesday nights in the West, Wednesdays at 12 noon in Asia, Tokyo and Seoul. People want to tune in to that. We will have Riding Shotgun as co-host to what is mostly a news analysis with a little bit of pop culture and all kinds of fun little things, including health and wellness mixed into the lot. That's the format approach we're taking. Dustin Fox, a.k.a. Simply Fox, out of the state of Maine, and Anonymous Radio Redux will be helping to hold things down on that front. It's a simple one-hour show is what we'll be doing each week. Something, if you don't manage to get enough of us on the weekends, Friday nights, Saturdays, with the feature event, you'll want to tune into and check out. Don't forget to check us out on iTunes as well, too, Pirate Radio Podcasts. We can be found across most big social media, including Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Minds.com, and the like. On that note, thank you once again to Emily Anderson. I am Jaffe Ryder. This has been episode 98 of Pirate Radio Podcast. So on behalf of Captain Long John Sinclair and all the rest of the Robin Hood's crew, until we meet again out on the high digital seas, happy sailing. I know. There we be. Having carefully looked over each of our navigation panel instruments, checking every level, switch, dial, cable, knob, and pulley, by all accounts and indications, we indeed see it's time once again to drop anchor inside Mystic Bay and draw an end to another week of Pirate Radio Podcasts. Remember, if you're looking for a little more lively online action, keep in mind we've likely got yet another great free-flowing Rogues Gallery after show coming up for the next hour in either Skype, Google Hangouts, or Peer.im. Also, if you've in any way enjoyed or found yourself benefiting from the shows we've tirelessly produced over the past 2 years, you might want to drop by our Patreon tip jar page and lend a little support. Half of all network donations go directly to charity. Help to keep those numbers growing over on Patreon, and we'll be able to extend even more of a generous pirate hand. Looking forward now to the balance of 2018, we're still not quite yet booked. So if you yourself have a new, novel, intriguing, or otherwise underreported idea, unique individual, or pressing item in mind, be sure to either drop us a line directly over on WPRPN.com or fire us a quick email via PirateOneRadio@gmail.com. We're always open to exploring fresh creative suggestions, intriguing guest ideas, cutting-edge discussion topics, and captivating themes. You can further embark on your own personal pirate journey by either liking, commenting on, subscribing to, or just following us via virtually any mainstream social media platform, including Twitter, Facebook, Google+, or Minds.com. So don't forget to become engaged. Until we meet again out on the high digital seas, I'm your host as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. Tally-ho.